This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So the Mariners extended their lease for another 25 years at Safeco, though it's not going to be called Safeco, right, at the end of this season. They're going to be paying $55 million in rent, but Dow Constantine, the King County executive, he's also offering public subsidies from the hotel motel tax, which was used to originally pay for this stadium, King Dome, and CenturyLink.
It's a relatively small percentage of the total tourism tax stream.
So? Why is that important? Do they need it? Okay, fine, but could we put that relatively small percentage somewhere else? That's basically what King County Councilmember Dave Updegrove is complaining about.
Mariners have reached an agreement with the operators of Safeco Field to renew their lease for another 25 years. However, they've come to King County asking for $185 million to help cover the expenses. And I think this is a bad idea, number one, because the Mariners are a profitable private business that can and should pay for their own expenses. But most important...
And by the way, we're going to have the council member on probably next week at some point. We couldn't get him on today, but we hope next week. I'm just curious to find out if the Mariners were not financially successful, if he would hold the same position. Because I would. Even if they were not financially successful, at this point, it's on them, right? I mean, at this point, we've already paid for the stadium. The money isn't going to the stadium in any meaningful way. I was at Safeco the other day. It's gorgeous. It's still holding up really, really well. So I don't think the money needs to go there, but let's allow him to finish his point.
Only there are higher priority uses for those dollars. State law allows us to use that same money if we want to fund affordable housing programs. And right now it's so hard to live in this region. So for me, it's really a question of values and priorities. Do we spend this in ways that help working people be able to afford to live in the region, or we provide $180 million to a single company?
So I don't necessarily think we need to put the money into affordable housing, because King County has shown that they don't have a money problem. They have an efficiency of using our money problem. They have a leadership problem. They have a communication problem. So I'm not running to put the motel hotel tax profits into housing affordability when the council in King County has shown that they're not really capable of fixing the perceived problem. But I agree with the fact that, yeah, I'm not giving... Why would I give Safeco any more money? That at this point, it's ridiculous. And I don't know exactly what we're supposed to do with this whole idea of, oh, well, you got to support your team. We pay tickets to go there. Put the money there. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
The Bechor Kolem Cemetery in Seattle, a Jewish cemetery, has had to bring in armed security to the premises in order to protect visitors and staff members, thanks to the dangerous, dangerous homeless problem that the city of Seattle is unwilling to do anything about. Certainly, their council member who represents this particular portion of the city, Deborah Juarez, isn't doing anything. She was supposedly going to show up for a meeting, but instead showed up, had her staff show up on her behalf. And the cemetery is saying to themselves, look, we got to do something about this. We can't rely on the city to protect us. And so they had young children on site yesterday, placing American flags on the graves of all the veterans there, about 200 in total. So they had to bring in armed security to keep them safe. Here's Ari Hoffman with the synagogue that's attached to this particular cemetery, saying the problem is getting overwhelming. Here he is talking with Como TV.
We fear for our safety. We've had to spend $110,000 cleaning up this place. If people think I'm going overboard, I don't think I've done enough. If I really wanted to solve this, we'd have armed security here every single night. I just don't know if we can afford that.
That's a problem, yeah. That's a problem, because this is a cemetery. This is a place we're supposed to respect. In a city that says they deeply care about the community. Although last night with the anti-Semitic film screening that two Seattle commissions and a council member sponsored, maybe they really don't care about this particular community, the Jewish community. But the cemetery has been sullied with human waste, used needles, trash everywhere. And on Tuesday of this week, and I just saw this report this morning, apparently a groundskeeper said he caught a couple having sex on the tombstones. Seattle police took a report. They let the couple go because they just denied having sex at the cemetery, so they couldn't exactly hold them because there was no other evidence other than the groundskeeper. Veteran Bob Shea, he's one of the armed security members there. He says this was necessary.
We didn't want the kids to be out here if there was going to be a problem.
This is what Seattle has become. This is what Seattle has become. And it's a shame. And I can't say I'm shocked. Because what is a cemetery to someone who doesn't really give a damn about his or her surroundings? It's just a park. You have council members in Seattle like Mike O'Brien, who just moments after the city of Seattle decided to increase, again, a tax to pay to better our parks, to put more money and resources into our parks, he says, oh, go ahead and camp out wherever it is you want. We're going to allow you to camp out on parks. We don't care. Got to put you somewhere. Yeah, we've definitely got shelter beds available, but I'm going to pretend we don't because I want to create a crisis that allows you to give me tens of millions of more dollars that I'll misspend, of course, because I don't know what the hell it is I'm doing. Go wherever you want. And this is what happens. Because we've enabled a whole bunch of people. We've told the SPD that they don't actually have to get involved and enforce the law. In fact, if you do, you're going to be in trouble for it. You've committed some sort of social injustice against the housing insecure. We can't say homeless anymore. They're housing insecure. These people are living with addictions, and they are ruining neighborhoods. And the council is willing to let it happen because then they can convince you to give them tens and tens and tens of more millions of dollars for programs that have shown no results whatsoever. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
Finally, now we have actor Morgan Freeman being accused of sexual harassment. This according to a CNN report. It runs the gamut. It's mostly the ones that I've seen include unwanted touching and sexual comments, sexual harassment that were inappropriate and a little bit creepy. A production assistant on the movie Going in Style, which I think came out within the last few years, right? That's a fairly recent event.
Alan Alda and Michael Caine.
It got horrible reviews. It looked horrible. She claims that, quote, he kept trying to lift up my skirt and asking if I was wearing underwear. And Alan Arkin, at some point had to tell him to stop.
Yeah.
Did he not report this to anybody? I'm kind of curious if Alan Arkin reported this kind of behavior to anyone.
Sounds like no. There's no indications of that, yeah.
But maybe I haven't seen either way, so I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. It's possible. At least he had the foresight to say, what are you doing, dude? You can't do that to anybody. On the set of Now You See Me, he would comment about the physical appearances of women who worked in the production department. And Chloe Mellis of CNN, an entertainment reporter, she's the one who started looking into this because she herself was the victim of this kind of sexual harassment.
Carol, the impetus for this investigation was actually my own experience with Morgan Freeman at a junket last year for the movie Going in Style. Right when I walked into the room, he began making sexually suggestive comments to me. Now, as an entertainment reporter for over a decade, it was unlike anything I truly have ever experienced. One of those comments was caught on tape. In this comment that's on tape, he says to me, boy, do I wish I was there, while looking me up and down. I was 6 months pregnant at the time, and his co-stars, Alan Arkin and Michael Caine, were seated on either side of him and actually looked at him when he made this comment to me. Again, it was caught on tape. And take a note of Freeman's eyes in this clip.
One time I congratulate the woman on being pregnant, and she wasn't. And so I've never done it again. For 50 years, I've never done it.
You've learned your lesson.
I learned my lesson.
Boy, do I wish I was there.
This movie is...
Ew. And then he called her ripe, which I'm not entirely sure I even understand that as a come-on, but okay. Tyra Martin is a reporter for WGN in Chicago. This is her experience.
Hi, how are you?
I'm better now.
Thanks. I don't have any magic tricks. I kind of feel like I showed up for dinner without anything.
I wouldn't worry about that. You got magic written all over you, child.
Oh, thank you. That's a good medicine for a single girl.
Ooh. I'm single, too.
Are you?
Yes.
are you enjoying Bachelor?
Okay, so this one I find myself a little less outraged by because she's clearly flirting back. Now, I suppose you can make the argument that she was put in a position where she felt she had to.
Right, but
they added the sex music at the end. Did you hear that in the background?
I don't know why that's there, but you can see on her face that feels like she is being required to engage with him and she doesn't want to.
This one seemed a little bit more like he was playing a character, I guess. But again, does it matter? No. He's claiming he didn't do anything that knowingly or intentionally offended anyone. Doesn't matter. It's inappropriate. It's inappropriate. Period. So what are the consequences of this? He's 80 years old. He didn't do anything, as far as I can tell, that would land you in jail. At least I haven't seen any of those allegations yet. You can get him sued. It can maybe get the production company sued, and they might have to pay out. Does this change the way you look at Morgan Freeman? Send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. The KTTH Hotline brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. We're live in the Online Training Academy studio. Thank you so much for following me on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me there both under the screen name Jason Rants. It's all one word, JasonRantz. Doug Baldwin of the Seahawks is a big reason why I think the NFL is doing so poorly, because in one breath, one sentence, he can call the president an idiot and then complain that the president is being a little bit too divisive.
He's an idiot. Plain and simple. I mean, listen, you know, I respect the man.
I usually, by the way, before I call someone an idiot, I say, Jacob, I respect you, but boy, are you a dummy. Boy, do I hate everything about you. There's no respect when you call someone an idiot. Well, what do we? He's an idiot, but I respect him. No, you don't. Why lie about whether or not you respect him? Just say you don't respect him. None of what you're about to say in this 40-second clip, angry that the NFL has decided to say, yeah, you can stay in the locker room, but if you're coming out from the national anthem, you got to stand up, got to actually be respectful to the troops and the anthem. You hate him. So just say that. Just own it.
Because he's a human being, you know, first and foremost, but he's just being more divisive, which is not surprising. It is what it is. You know, but for him to say that anybody who doesn't follow his viewpoints or his constituents' viewpoints, you know, should be kicked out of the country.
He didn't say that. He didn't say that, Doug. You're a liar. You're now lying. Here's the deal. You can hold your opinion about the president. I don't personally care what Doug Baldwin thinks about anything. The same way I don't care about what any athlete or musician or actor cares about anything, even when they agree with me. That's not what the president said. You know that's not what the president said. You're making things up. You're taking things out of context, all while claiming so sanctimoniously that he's the one who's dividing the country. There is no doubt that the president has used rhetoric and language that is divisive. But so are you. You can't say, on the one hand, his divisiveness is wrong and evil and immoral, needs to stop, and then engage in the exact same strategy.
It's just, it's not very empathetic. It's not very American-like, actually, to me. It's not very patriotic. It's not what this country was.
I thought there was nothing more patriotic than dissent. Okay, sorry.
Founded upon. So it's kind of ironic to me that the president of the United States is contradicting what our country is really built on.
I thought our country was built on freedom of speech. I thought our country was built on shared values, but also understanding that some people disagree. And you can have honest conversations with people who disagree. Now, I think the president too often will turn to insults. I think that that's wrong. But I also think Doug Baldwin and folks on his side of this particular issue are too quick to turn to insults, and that is wrong. You are the reason, a big reason, this kind of rhetoric, a big reason why over the last two seasons, the NFL has done so poorly that they instituted this rule. You can disagree with the rule as someone who just doesn't think you should force patriotism. Fine. They have the right to do this, whether or not you agree. But the only reason they've implemented this new ruling is because the events on the field have caused the consumers to go elsewhere. That's the only reason. They don't necessarily believe what the president is doing is right. They don't necessarily believe what Doug Baldwin stands for is wrong. They know that this has hurt them. And likewise, when Doug Baldwin comes out there and calls the president an idiot, it might work for the progressive in Seattle who pretends that they follow the Seahawks. I wonder, however, if it works for the NFL fan who lives in Spanaway and Yelm, in Redmond, in Chehalis, in Spokane, in Tri-Cities, the people who spend money going to games, buying Doug Baldwin jerseys, who may also support the president. This whole idea, because they are the Seattle Seahawks, they pretend that Seattle progressive values is behind their fans. I don't think that's the case. The NFL has always been more of a sport that appeals to traditionally conservative individuals. Not exclusively. But I'm willing to bet when you look at the actual data of the demographics, the majority of them are at least moderate Republicans. Just geographically, where the NFL is so popular, that makes sense. You're part of the problem. You are the reason why this entire ruling had to even be instituted. People are abandoning the Seahawks, and you could have taken the high road. You chose not to, and I don't know why. Because there is a high road that he could take. There are comments he can make that are totally legitimate. There are comments and debate points that he can engage in that I think is good for the community. But starting off the conversation, Trump's an idiot, plain and simple. What do you think that does? Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770, with your reaction. 1-800-465-8770. Puyallup doesn't respect free speech, and is Bellingham to Washington what Florida is to the United States? It's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Snoqualmie, Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
The media out here is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, and they end up ignoring, just flat-out ignoring, all the important and interesting, and yeah, sometimes quirky stories happening all across the state of Washington. So weekday morning, 7:30, right here on the Jason Ranch Show, thanks to our friends over at Tulalip Resort Casino. We do something called the Big Local, where we focus on you and the cities you live in, and we ignore the city of Seattle. And we start this morning in Puyallup, where signature gatherers are suing the city because of an executive order that says they can't gather near the annual fair and the spring fair to get signatures on their petitions. You see, they designate the areas around the entrances as, quote, pedestrian safety zones. And they argue if that you're standing there and you get people maybe to stand with you as they're looking over your petition and they take the time to fill it out, that you're causing some sort of safety issue, which seems kind of ridiculous to me. You've been to the Puyallup. I'm not calling it the Washington State Fair. You've been to the Puyallup Fair.
Yes.
They're not like little tiny sidewalks or entrances. They're very big.
Yeah.
You can clearly have and safely have someone there collecting signatures. This is just kind of annoying. This is stupid. Now, signature gatherers can sometimes be a little bit too pushy, right? And the wrong kinds. It's like, I'm not interested. But this is ridiculous. Oh, no, someone's going to be in danger because of this. No one's going to be in danger because of this.
That's what they're saying, like it's dangerous?
It's a safety issue. They're claiming it's a safety issue to have people near entrances by the fair. But it makes sense for petition gatherers to be there, mm-hmm. signature gatherers to be there, because you've got a whole bunch of people coming in and out of the fair.
I mean, well, how far off? Because the other thing is that people come from kind of all directions and mm-hmm. they meet at these little corners of the entrances.
They're not little.
No, yeah. Can you just move off like a little bit? You'd still run into a significant number of people.
Not as many, obviously, but the pedestrian safety zone, I believe, is the entire block and the area around the entrance. And so if you go across the street,
yeah.
But that's still not going to be the same as being close to the actual people walking in. And especially because if you're buying tickets and you're standing in line, it makes sense maybe to walk up to someone. Why can they stand in line and that's not a safety issue? It's people just hanging out.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous to me. Roy Ruffino, he's an activist there who's trying to get signatures for something. He's suing because he was threatened with arrest when he was doing this job. According to the city's executive order, the safety, and this is to the Tacoma News Tribune, the safety zones are intended to prohibit, quote, anything that obstructs, impedes, blocks, hinders, hampers, prohibits, slows, delays, or otherwise interferes with pedestrian traffic. You know what does that? Lines to get a ticket, lines to get into the actual fare. Doesn't that slow traffic? What if I'm just trying to walk by, but I can't because of this line of people trying to get into the fare? This is ridiculous.
I guess I'm curious what the rules are in other areas, because at least I just went to the San Juan Islands over last weekend, and we were you sit in your car basically in line to get onto the ferry,
mm-hmm.
and there was a man going around collecting signatures. I forget for exactly what it was, but he's going through the cars. I mean, he wasn't in the way, but certainly if you're talking about things that could potentially become dangerous, a guy walking around a bunch of cars that are eventually going to need to get on this ferry,
I'm willing to bet he wasn't allowed to do that, and they just allowed it.
Maybe.
They just didn't enforce it. And that's the problem here. If they weren't actually enforcing this stupid executive order, you know, you would just coexist with it, because it's not actually being enforced. So they're suing, and I hope they win. I'm always going to err on the side of more speech, even when it's speech I disagree with. And in this case, I don't even know if I disagree, but there's certainly the potential to ask to sign something that I disagree with. There's no... Just stop. Can we just stop? You just don't want them doing it because you think it hassles the people coming in. And you're sticking up, perhaps, for the customer, right, who comes into the fares. This is an overreach. I hope that the courts will agree with me and this guy, Roy Ruffino. Meanwhile, Bellingham is kind of our Florida. Like, you know how Florida is to the United States? Bellingham is to Washington, in that the crazy stories of criminals tend to happen in Florida for whatever reason. And in the state of Washington, how many more Bellingham stories can we possibly get with crazy criminals? Doesn't it feel like we're getting these at least once a week? Just some crazy person?
Yeah, I mean, that's not just Bellingham.
We're getting a lot from Bellingham. They are disproportionately represented in the big local with crazy criminal stories.
I remember, are you thinking of other ones besides the poop? That's the one, the person put 100 pounds of dog poop on a woman's car.
I love that story. It's my favorite.
We never got to the bottom of that. I feel like they never
Detective Rummel didn't figure that out.
I don't think the real detectives figured it out either.
I think this one might be related to another crazy story. Bellingham police arrested a 22-year-old dude. His name is Dalton William Edwards, after he allegedly broke into an apartment complex and decided to strip naked. The Bellingham Herald reports, police were called at 2:34 p.m., and I think that part's important because I assumed drunkenness in the middle of the night. He could still be drunk, but 2:34 p.m. after a report that a man had entered the apartment of a female resident. This is probably my favorite line in the story. The woman asked him to leave, according to a report from Lieutenant Danette Beckley, but he decided he would rather disrobe. The woman fled the apartment and called 911. While police officers were en route, the man, who reportedly was still naked, attempted to enter a second residence. The door was locked, but all five occupants were exposed to his nudity. Which I'm assuming, at that point, you're looking through the window. Right? Does that count as exposed to his nudity? You made a choice. Someone said, "Hey guys, get to look what's happening. Come through the window," and they all gather and they all look.
No, it's if someone's naked in their window.
No, he wasn't at the window.
Okay.
He was trying to get into the apartment. The door was locked. So how were they exposed to his nudity? They would have had to gone to the window to look.
Yes, but you're still you still might.
I'm giving him a pass on two of the people of the five. I'll say, you know what, three just happened to have been there, but then the other two was like, "Hey, come to the window, what's happening."
How old are the people?
They didn't say specifically in this case. Some of them overall were, I think they said 14 and under or around 14.
Well, but you can't blame that. So I can accept the framing of it as exposing.
Oh, that's all I'm saying is, I don't give them a pass on the vast majority. At some point, someone said, "Hey, honey, look what's happening outside. It's crazy."
It also doesn't... even if you're naked in public and no one's around to see it, you're still naked in public. You're still breaking the law.
I'm not saying he didn't break the law.
What's the significance of the distinction that you're trying to make?
I just feel like I want to be fair to all sides. A third resident in the area reported to police that a naked man had entered their home, exposing himself to two victims who also fled. So the first thing that came to mind after the drug or drunk thing, which maybe is still a case. Remember a few months ago, there was a serial flasher in Bellingham? Did you remember that story? They were going around the college and they were just flashing people in through their windows and running. It was a Peeping Tom story. Okay. Remember that?
Not really.
What if he's just...
Yeah. Okay. Let's say yes.
Can
let's
we?
Say
I remember what are you doing? What do you care?
I don't.
If you so, why not just go with it?
I'm not making it up. Maybe you are.
But I'm not.
And I don't want to get wrapped
in your scheme. No, you're not getting wrapped in anything. You're here for one more week. You're not getting wrapped in anything. It's just this whole, like, what can't you just go with it?
All right.
So let's just try that again. Remember that story of the flasher, which then helps make my point here? The serial flasher?
That one.
Okay, can we do... Hey, Darren, remember the story of the flasher in Bellingham a few months ago?
Yes.
Oh, you just can't... No, you both are the worst... Well, what
which
if
one?
Pay it if you want to pay us for acting.
I'm not paying you for anything. You're lucky you get a paycheck for producing. What if it's that guy? What if he's the serial flasher? Because they never caught the guy, right? I don't remember getting an updated story on that.
No.
That also was not
the case. Well, because I don't remember the original story. I don't remember
the update. You're Googling it right now. I see you Googling it.
No.
Well, what are you Googling? Was random statistics?
Bellingham.
There was definitely flasher. A serial... 1-800-465-8770.
Sketch,
text me.
They released a sketch. This is back in January 2016. This is forever ago.
This was a... No. There, he struck multiple times. This was over the course of a long period of time.
November 3rd, 2017.
Yeah, there you go.
Composite sketch. So.
That was the last time I think we did that.
Let's see if there's...
What does a composite sketch of a streaker look like?
You just see downstairs.
I will say...
Detailed.
It's just a creepy looking face in a trench coat.
Both the photos I'm looking at, and again, these are drawn almost a year and a half apart. They do look like the same man.
What if we found the guy? What if it all comes to an end now? I don't know. He's got to go through. He's only alleged. I don't know if he actually did it because I gave his name out and I don't want him suing me because it would be really weird to get sued by a serial flasher. He allegedly did this. I wonder if there's any connection. Or there's just a flashing problem in the city of Bellingham.
Yeah.
People just like to get nude. You know, clothes, they keep us... There's no individuality. It's just, let's just walk around however we want. It's a little warm day. We want a nice little breeze. The best way to get a breeze downstairs, take off your pants. So Jason Rancho, if you want to send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show live in the Online Trading Academy studio. The Gang of Eight reviewed sensitive material about the FBI's use of an informant in the Trump campaign. Democrats are mad. White House staffers were there at the meeting. Republicans are mad. The intelligence officials didn't turn over actual documents concerning these allegations. Everyone's mad or annoyed. Joining me with more is our friend who's not mad or annoyed. Fox News Radio's Jared Halperin. Jared, thank you so much for joining me.
Sure thing. How are you?
I'm doing good. Take us through this meeting that happened yesterday, and how did it end up becoming a bipartisan meeting?
Well, there were two meetings. The first one was the one that was originally scheduled and set up by the White House, and that was at the Department of Justice with FBI Director Christopher Wray, DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, and the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. And this was set up by the White House Chief of Staff John Kelly to answer questions that two Republican committee chairmen had, the Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes and the House Oversight Committee Chairman Trey Gowdy, about, you know, this reported informant. I know President Trump is calling it Spygate and sort of what this was all about. It was a classified briefing. Democrats were furious. This is highly inappropriate to only have Republicans invited to this. Initially, the White House pushed back and said, well, the Democrats haven't asked for any of this information. Why would we give it to them? That pressure sort of built. And then the plan was, well, we'll have a second meeting. So we'll have this first meeting at the Department of Justice for the two Republican committee members. And then we'll have a second Gang of Eight briefing on Capitol Hill. The Gang of Eight is the sort of main intelligence. Any time that the president needs to share very sensitive classified information that may need some sort of congressional oversight, but you want a very small group to know this information, it's called the Gang of Eight. It's the top Republican and Democrat in Congress for both sides. So in this case, it would be Paul Ryan, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, and then the Intelligence Committee Republican and Democrat for House and Senate. So that's the gang of those are the eight people in the Gang of Eight. that still didn't seem to satisfy everybody. I understand that, for instance, Adam Schiff, who is the top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, was at that earlier meeting and was at the later one as well. I think Paul Ryan couldn't make the second meeting, so he went to the first meeting. So who was there and where they were sort of changed and was in flux throughout the day. But it sort of shows, the uncertainty that still existed with even having this meeting. Then, as the meeting started, there was another dust-up, because initially the White House said that nobody from the White House, including John Kelly, was going to be there, that he was simply there to sort of facilitate this. Well, John Kelly showed up with Emmett Flood, who, if people don't know, is the new White House attorney. He's fairly new to the position, the White House attorney, who is handling the Russia investigation on behalf of the president. So the president's got sort of private counsel. This is the in-house counsel for the Russia investigation. Ty Cobb had that job. Maybe he's known to people. He had the mustache. And they showed up, and that was seen as, what are they doing here? Now, the White House says that they showed up simply because they facilitated the meeting, made some brief remarks before the briefing started, and then left. Democrats have corroborated that, but still say it was highly inappropriate for them to even be there to say anything, because after all, this is a meeting that was set up to share information that may have something to do with this investigation, right? And why would the White House be represented at something like that? So,
Jared, do we know
a lot of controversy surrounding these meetings?
Do we know? Has anyone spoken, even in the general sense, of what they actually might have looked at? I know that Adam Schiff is speaking.
Yeah,
Devin Nunes
really
is not.
They haven't. Yeah. Again, it's a classified meeting. As you said, the only sort of public statements we heard was Adam Schiff read a statement on behalf of all of the Democrats that said that they were there to make sure that sources and methods weren't implicated, and that they did, their view has not changed, that they have not seen any evidence that would suggest that there was a spy used against the Trump campaign or any other inappropriate action. I heard Mitch McConnell on with Brett Baer yesterday, who wouldn't say much about the meeting other than he said nothing surprised him. I don't know what that means, but again, the Gang of Eight is really gathers for the most sensitive of information. So the idea that we would get a lot of information about what was said was not the expectation. But listen, there have been leaks, obviously, that have come out from the, and that was what one of the concerns with Democrats was, by the way, is that's why they wanted to be represented. They didn't want a situation like that where, then they believe, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, well, it's interesting,
whole thing,
though,
particularly on the House side, more so than the Senate side, has become so politicized that at least for I don't know what the final, obviously there's been a very politicized report that came out from the House Intelligence Committee. Democrats wrote a counter report. It was voted on. It only got Republican votes. The Senate has run a much more bipartisan investigation. And so I think it will be telling to see if there are stark differences in the conclusions that the Senate Intelligence Committee found over the House committee, because, again, the relationship between Burr and Warner on the Senate side seems to have been far less strained than what you've seen with Adam Schiff and Devin Nunes on the House side.
So then what have intelligence officials confirmed about what President Trump is declaring Spygate?
Very little.
So haven't they confirmed at least there was an informant, or at least the indication seems to be that there was an informant, whether or not we want to call that person a spy.
It's all going to sort of, listen, I think this is going to come down to sort of, what's your definition of spy and informant, and, how are these types of counterintelligence investigations, which is what this was, run? And was any of this sort of out of the realm of standard practice and procedure? That seems to be the question that most needs to be answered, that Republicans want to know, that was this really, and what was the motivation behind it, right? Was there a political motivation behind it, or was there a legitimate law enforcement motivation behind this? And so that's, I think, what this is going to come down to, right? Is an informant the same as a spy? Were they infiltrated? Were they approached? Those are going to be the distinctions that are going to be very important as this moves forward.
So then what's the next step for both sides in finding out the answer to that? We only have about a minute and a half left.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, again, as you pointed out, Republicans don't seem to be satisfied that they saw the documents they want to see. I don't know what the next step is. Ultimately, a lot of this is going to come down to whatever the final conclusions of the special counsel are, won't it?
Yeah, I suppose it will be. And something tells me, depending on the results, one side is going to say that it was an outrage.
Yeah, that's not going to satisfy everybody
either. Yeah, so let's just live in the world where no one's going to be satisfied. I've been talking with Fox News Radio's Jared Halpert. Again, for an update on this meeting that happened yesterday, check out foxnews.com. Jared, thanks for stopping by.
Sure thing.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.